I guess some new people have come, right? To join? Is it on? Yes.
Tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow. Tomorrow. What's today? The third day or the fourth day? Oh. So everybody who was here in the beginning is still here?
It's hard to really know.
It's hard to know. They appear to be the same, but. When I mentioned yesterday about tank tops and shorts not being illegal or immoral, I wasn't referring to Zendo attire. I know it's hot, but please let us maintain the rules for Zendo apparel. Dark, subdued clothing. Short sleeves are okay, but probably not tank tops. Maybe it would be okay if there is some kind of pants that people wear that show part of the lower leg, but not too much, not shorts. Shorts in the Zendo, not a good idea. Anyway, if we all keep this guideline, we will have a nice, quiet, careful Zendo feeling. Possibly some of you have been to our sessions in Mexico, where it's tropical and we have no guidelines. The people there never heard of any guidelines for dress, and I never mentioned any guidelines for dress, so they don't know there are. I think they would be shocked to come here and say, why are all these people dressed in dark clothing? And it's hot, why don't they take all their clothes off and come to the Zendo with hardly anything on like we do? So it's a different feeling in Mexico. It's a different place and the practice is different. But here, the practice is this way. Anyway, if you're wearing more clothes than you would like to be wearing because it's hot, then you have a chance to practice the wonderful, one of the greatest Zen koans about hot and cold, which I'm sure you all know. The monastic says, how can I escape heat and cold? And Dongshan says, well, that's easy, just go where there's no heat and cold. And the monastic says, well, where would that be? And Dongshan says, when it's hot, the heat kills you. When it's cold, the cold kills you. And kill means finishes you off, frees you from yourself. And that's what we're here for, right? We're here to be free of ourselves, free of our smallness, free of the little world we've created for ourselves that's so confining. So if it's hot, be totally hot. And if it's cold, be totally cold. When you don't like the weather, you're just unhappy, that's all. The weather doesn't change. Anyway, I feel sorry for the poor priests who always have to wear their many layers of robes, no matter what the weather is. But I you know, it's their own fault. Yeah, they should have checked into this point before they got on here. And while I'm making excellent suggestions for you, I have other suggestions. When you drink tea in the Zendo, try to practice drinking tea with the teacup, you know. Try to practice with the teacup with your whole body. Don't just treat the teacup like it's some like cheap piece of stuff that doesn't matter. Treat it like as if it were actually alive. Treat it as if it were a living being, just like your body. It's alive. And when you drink, hold the teacup with two hands and bring it into your body. And notice how it comes to your body when you drink. And when you put the teacup down, after you finish drinking, feel how the teacup wants to return to rest, and how perfectly it will settle there. So see if you can feel that when you're drinking tea. As you know, in Asia, tea is not just tea, it's something sacred. It's a sacred offering of the earth to human beings. And drinking tea is a considered, you know, profound practice. And I can't drink tea now without thinking of a couple of years ago or a year and a half or so ago when we were in Korea. And we hung around quite a bit with this wonderful monastic who became our dear friend, Kungam Sanim, who always smiled and said very little. He hardly talked. And his practice was making and drinking tea. He had this whole setup in his various temples, and wherever we were, he would make tea. And we spent many, many hours in Korea with him and whoever else was around drinking tea. And there's a great mystique to drinking tea, so let's see if we can capture that ourselves, discover this wonderful practice of drinking tea. And I was saying to David the other day as we were jolly yakking together, that the best thing for me about coming to Samish is this funny thing we do, walking back and forth and back and forth in this big expanse of space. And those of us who wear okesas and rakasus are putting them on and taking them off and putting them on and taking them off and putting them on and taking them off many, many times a day. And what a great practice this is, you know, walking back and forth and back and forth. And where in the world are we going? Wherever we're going, we know that pretty soon we're going to be going in the opposite way, right? And I love this about coming to Samish. This is my favorite thing. Back and forth. Back and forth, back and forth, going and coming, coming and going, walking with sometimes the people are in front of you, sometimes the people are behind you, sometimes you're passing the people going the other way. Just these same few people, there's only a few people, you know, you keep passing the same ones over and over and over again. What a great practice. For me, I love this practice, wearing Buddha's robe, putting it on, taking it off, putting it on, taking it off. Walking back and forth and back and forth. It becomes endless, back and forth, forth and back. You know, the secret ingredient of all religious practice, this is what makes it special. Repetition, mindless repetition, over and over and over again, the same thing for an entire lifetime until time disappears. So as we practice this walking back and forth, I hope you can feel the virtue of it in your actual body and in your actual breathing as you go back and forth. And when you're walking, don't feel like the surroundings are somewhere else, out there. Here I am in this beautiful place. Don't let yourself be fooled like that. Don't peer around looking at all this interesting stuff. Just open your eyes and see what's there in front of you. And whatever it is, take it in to your whole body. See if you can feel like what's around you is not out there. It's actually in your body. It's part of your body. I'm talking about an actual way that you feel when you're in a space. There is no outside or inside. It's actually true, literally true. It's what the Buddha said. There's no outside, no inside, no in between. See if you can practice that as you walk back and forth. And as you walk into the Zendo, don't forget to put your hands in Shashu and walk carefully and resolutely to your seat. Walking resolutely. Who does this, right? This is a great practice, to enter the Zendo and walk resolutely to your seat. Every step decisive. Every step, the last step, and the first step. So this whole week, when you walk into the Zendo, do not be fooled. Do not be thinking, oh, this is just me walking into the Zendo. Do not be fooled by that. You should be pretending that it's not you, that it's Buddha walking into the Zendo. Dogen says, and all the Mahayana sutras says, you know, we are Buddha. We should take that seriously. We are dignified, awakened human beings. Let's take that seriously. And if we walk into the Zendo like Buddhas, we will be Buddhas. And one last thing. This is a secret teaching from my own teacher. I always practice like this because it's like his secret teaching. But now I'm going to tell you, just don't spread this around to anybody else, and we'll somehow try to, let's see if we can splice this out of the recording so that other people won't find out about this. But here's the secret teaching. You pick up your hard-boiled egg. Right? You make a fist like this. You see this knuckle right here? Turn the egg around. Hardly makes a sound. And then you just peel the egg. It works perfectly every time. That's why the knuckle comes out like that. Hard-boiled egg. So try that. Try that with the hard-boiled egg. It works really good. Only twice. Once, turn around on the other side. Once, and it's done. It's beautiful. So those are a few suggestions of ways you could practice. And it's kind of more or less what we were studying the other day in Dogen. Take refuge in our breath, in the belly. Take refuge in our walking back and forth. Take refuge in our teacup. Take refuge in our hard-boiled egg on the knuckle. In our practice, everything is practice, not just sitting. Sitting just reminds us that everything is practice. So our job is to remember that we're always practicing. Even when we have a messed up mind, we're always practicing. So we should act like we're always practicing. So today I want to go back and see if I can finish the rest of, we only got about maybe one half way through Dogen's fascicle, Shōwaku Makusa, refrain from evil. So I'm see today if we can get through the next half of it. Maybe you noticed since yesterday that we mentioned the three pure precepts in our meal chant. Did you notice? Yeah. In the meal chant, I think we say, avoid all evil, cultivate all good, free all beings. Isn't that how we say it in the meal chant? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Avoid all evil.
First portion is?
Mm-hmm. To avoid all evil.
End all evil.
End all evil, yeah. But the third one is free all beings. And in his fascicle, Dogen quotes the original formulation of that, which is not But the third one, which is not free all beings, but purify the mind. And it sounds very different, right? Purify the mind and free all beings sounds like two completely different. So they changed it. They changed the third precept. But no, they didn't change it. In Mahayana Buddhism, the understanding is that these are exactly the same thing. Two ways of saying the same thing. Purify the mind and free all beings or save all beings is the same thing. Because the mind is not this thing inside of our skull. That's not our mind. The mind is not something inside and the world is outside. Like I said a minute ago, there is no inside or outside. The mind is everything. All living beings and all inanimate beings, all existence is what is meant by mind. So purify mind means free all existence, clean this entire world until it's pure. So these are equivalent statements, free all beings, purify the mind. To think that you can be happy and liberated without taking in the whole of being as your body and heart is not really to purify your mind. It's just to have a temporary pleasant feeling of relief, which won't last. Anyway, we take up reading where we left off yesterday. Dogen is going on at some length, as we heard yesterday, about refrain from evil or refrain from unwholesome action. And since he understands these three pure precepts to be more or less aspects of one thing, what he says about the first one goes for all of them, so that's why he goes on quite a bit longer with the first one than with the others. So he writes, when you move mountains, rivers, and earth, as well as the sun, moon, and stars to practice, when you move them to practice, they in return move you to practice. This is not the open eye of just one time, but the vital eye of all times. Because it is all the open eye, the vital eye of all times, you move all Buddhas and all ancestors to practice, to listen to the teaching, and to realize the fruit. This is Dogen at his most inspiring. When we practice, we cause the mountains and the sky to practice. And out of gratitude, they cause us to practice too. So the mountains and the sky and the water are not just over there, you know, rocks and vapor and liquid. They are our friends. They are our intimates. They are reacting to us. They are moved by us. And we are moved by them. And this is happening not just now in session, when maybe we can actually feel the meaning of these words. It's happening forever and always. And it always has been, and it always will be. It's not just happening in the fleshly eye, it's happening in what Dogen calls the vital eye of all times. And that's the secret virtue of this world that sometimes we can dimly feel. That everything is always practicing together. And the Buddhas need us And we may think, you know, the Buddhas are, they did, they're fine, they did their job, they're somewhere in parinirvana. But no, the Buddhas need us. They don't exist, you know, somehow above us in a hierarchy of time, down to us, or, you know, behind us in the past. No. We are standing together with the Buddhas in a circle. We are facing them, they are facing us. Shakyamuni Buddha didn't practice heroically on his own a long time ago and attain. Shakyamuni Buddha is right now, just like us, trying to get awakened. And it won't happen unless we are awakened. He needs us, and we need him. Since all Buddhas and ancestors have not allowed the teaching, practice, and enlightenment to be divided, the teaching, practice, and enlightenment have not hindered all Buddhas and ancestors. So this is a subtle thought, I think. Hard to completely grasp. Teaching, practice, and enlightenment is one thing. It's not practice, enlightenment, teaching. It's one smooth back and forth movement, all inclusive of time and space. In fact, what Dogen is really saying is that this is just a way of saying what time and space is. It's teaching, practice, awakening. When the physicists try to figure out what time and space is, that's what they figure out. It's continuous. There are no pieces or parts or lumps. There's no separate container that we're in called time. There's only the arising and passing away of events. And whatever appears is unique and ungraspable. And we are like this, and the Buddhas are like this. Teaching and practice and awakening are not limited in some way that we conceptualize. You know, teaching is over here, practice is here in the Zendo. Those poor people in Seattle running around in all that traffic, they don't know anything about this great stuff that we're doing. No. There's no limitation like that. There's no division in actual practice, teaching, and awakening. There's no division like that in time and space. Nothing is apart from us. Time goes back and forth and back, passing one another behind, in front, above, below, all around. We're just moving, moving, moving through space all the time, freely moving in all directions. This is time. This is Dharma. And this is Buddha. For this reason, Dogen writes, for this reason, when you move Buddhas and ancestors to practice, none of them are separated from before or after your realization, either in the past, present, or future. And at the time when sentient beings become Buddhas and ancestors, they become Buddhas and ancestors without hindering the Buddhas and ancestors who already exist. Ponder this closely. When should you ponder it? While walking, standing, sitting, and lying down throughout the 12 hours of the day. In those days, there were only 12 hours. Did you know that in Dogen's time, there were 12 hours of the day, and the 12 hours were different in length depending on the time of the year? An hour wasn't like 60 minutes, it was a certain amount of time, longer in the summer, shorter in the winter. Of course, right? Anyway, ponder this. Walking, sitting, standing, lying down, throughout the 12 hours of the day. It's not that a sentient being is destroyed, taken away, or lost by becoming a Buddha ancestor. But a sentient being is dropped away. So that's just what I was suggesting in my little instructions for practice. Ponder this truth as you walk and sit and drink tea, that you are becoming a Buddha. That's what it means to live in time and to develop your life through time till the end. It means to become a Buddha. And when you do this, you are not hindering the Buddha of the past. And when you become a Buddha, he's saying, you don't disappear. And then a Buddha appears in your place. You actually stay yourself with all your foibles, just like before. But now they all become Buddha foibles. What does it mean when your same stupid foibles become Buddha foibles? It means you don't mind anymore. You don't mind anymore. You say, oh, that's fine. I appreciate my own special brand of lunacy. Nobody else is crazy in just this way. And I appreciate it. But remember, this is all a discussion, right, about refraining from evil, doing good and purifying the mind. So being you with all your craziness is perfectly okay because you're not hurting anybody anymore, including yourself. You've been hurting yourself a long time with all these foibles, right? Maybe hurting other people too. But now you're not doing that anymore. Dropped away is one of Dogen's many words for awakening. Dropped away means everything is still the same, but it's dropped, meaning now it's okay, because there's no sticky attachment aversion. It's just the way it is, and that's all right. He goes on, you allow the cause and effect of wholesome and unwholesome actions to practice. You allow the cause and effect of wholesome and unwholesome actions to practice. It is not that you put cause and effect into action. It's not that you put cause and effect into action, or that you create cause and effect, but cause and effect in time allows you to practice. The original face of cause and effect is already clear, because this is dropping away. It is refrained from. It is unborn, impermanent, not ignoring, and not dropping. So this is a very profound teaching, I think. Aren't we going along thinking that we are responsible, that we have to make things happen or stop things from happening? We, separate, lonely, outside beings who have to do things and make choices in a partial world that isn't us, that we have to create cause and effect, and oh dear, what a bad job we're doing. But no. When we practice refrain from evil and do good, what we're doing is allowing cause and effect to practice. In other words, what we're doing is we're allowing life to be life. We aren't pushing life, and therefore pushing ourselves away from life. We aren't shaping life, and therefore pushing ourselves out of shape. We're just joining life. any way we always have been. There is no other way. There never has been any other way. And it's been painful, this effort to live as if there were another way. Life makes your life. You don't make your life. And we know exactly what to do. We refrain from evil. We do good. We purify the mind. And doing that simply frees life to be life, which it would be anyway. Only difference is now we can appreciate it. Now we can enjoy it. And now we can feel it with more depth and more gratitude. And then life will take care of us. And life will take care of itself. Original face is another famous Zen saying from the story. You know, what is your original face before you were born? Another Zen koan for meditation. What's the original face of cause and effect? It's free of cause and effect, free of good or bad or neutral, unborn, undefiled, indivisible, all-inclusive, impermanent, disappearing right before our eyes. He says, it's dropping and not dropping. We don't ignore what must be done. And we practice being attached to what we should be attached to. Those who only know that unwholesome action arises through causes and conditions and do not see that causes and conditions themselves are refrain from, causes and conditions themselves are refrain from, those people should be pitied. They don't see that. Because Buddha seeds come forth through conditions, and conditions come forth through Buddha seeds. Unwholesome action is not refrain from, it is just refrain from. For example, a spring pine is neither existent nor non-existent. It is refrain from. An autumn chrysanthemum is neither non-existent nor existent. It is refrain from. All Buddhas are neither existent nor non-existent. They are refrain from. Pillars, lanterns, whisk, and staff are neither existent nor non-existent. They are refrain from. Self is neither existent nor non-existent. It is refrain from. This now becomes more difficult to explain. Maybe because it's so clear, you know, defies explanation, kind of like a poem, you know, it's so clear you can't explain it. You noticed that Dogen often does this. He often says things like, unwholesome action is not refrained from, it is just refrained from. And then you think, is that an error? Did the translator make a mistake there? No mistake there. That's just what Dogen meant to say. And it's not, you know, he doesn't mean it to be some kind of outrageous joke or something. And he means that the real refrain from is beyond our ideas about refrain from. It's beyond the big deal we make of it. When we just naturally are doing it, we don't see any refrain from. There's no precepts when you're really practicing precepts. You're not refraining from anything. You're just living your life. So refrain from is just refrain from. It's not refrain from, not an idea of refrain from. Everything is like this. Everything is refrain from, without any idea of refrain from as some extra thing. And what does it mean, refrain from? What does it really mean? What it means is basic, ordinary kindness, right? Refrain from evil means no hurting anybody, no selfishness. That's what all it means. Life is basically kind and unselfish. Life itself is refrain from. Life itself is basically kind. Even inanimate things are so dear. That teacup, how sweet, you know? Holds your tea just as you want it. Everything, even inanimate objects, so faithful, never complaining. That's what's so great about nature, you know, never complaining. Tree falls down, doesn't complain. Everything goes naturally, according to the back and forth, the coming and going nature of things. And that's life's great kindness. There is always growth and change. There's always flow, all the time, everywhere. And this goes for everything, for pine trees, chrysanthemums, Buddhas, pillars, lanterns, and the self. Now, finally, he gets to talking about the second precept, do good. He says, do good, do wholesome action. This wholesome action is the manifestation of one of the three natures, you know, good, evil, and neutral. Although there are many varieties of wholesome action, there is no wholesome action that is already actualized and waiting for someone to practice it. At the very moment of doing wholesome action, there is no wholesome action that does not come forth. So now, all the things he said about unwholesome action also apply, but now he's saying something a little more about wholesome action. He's talking about our human responsibility and our human power. Good is something we can do. It isn't, as he says, already there waiting for us. It depends on us. We have to do it. And when we do it, there is no end to the goodness we produce. One good action, one kind word or compassionate gesture contains and produces myriads of wholesome action. Which is why, when it may look to us like the world has gone mad and in a terrible, horrible fix and only will get worse, what is actually, in fact, going on is that every single day people are doing good. People are feeling concern for others. They're acting out of that concern with body, speech, and mind. And that goodness, even though it might not look like that to us, because our scope of seeing is so limited, that goodness is endlessly powerful. Every bad condition brings forth the possibility of goodness. And this is the great secret. The purpose of all the bad things and all the bad conditions is to get us to do good. And this is an immensely powerful thing. Our caring, even though it may be difficult for us, is something good, right? Even though you might think, I'm not doing anything. But when you care, you're doing something, because that's an action of mind, of heart. And that power of that good is awesome. You may think, the world is not perfect and there is no perfect world, but actually there are perfect worlds. According to Buddhism, there are perfect worlds. But those perfect worlds are not as good as this one. Because in those perfect worlds, we have no incentive to practice. You do not have to practice good in a perfect world. That's right. That's what the Buddha, it says that. You don't have to practice good in a perfect world. There's no need to practice good. And there's no awakening in a perfect world because of that. He then says, although myriads of wholesome actions are formless, they arrive at the place where wholesome action is done faster than a magnet drawing iron. Its power, the power of good, its power is stronger than a Virumbhaka storm. The great earth, mountains, rivers, the lands of the world, or the increasing effect of action cannot hinder the intentional encounter of wholesome action. A Virumbhaka storm is an aeon-ending or cosmic-ending storm. Like an entire cosmos burns out in a Virumbhaka. Whenever a cosmic world system ends, this storm comes through. So, in other words, very big storm, powerful storm. Nothing like the little piddly little earthquakes and storms we have around here. Huge storm. Wholesome action is stronger than this. And one wholesome action draws, like a powerful magnet, other wholesome actions to it. The unstoppable power of goodness is like no other power in the universe. Nothing can hinder it. Not mountains, not whole continents rising up, not even the entire stock of bad karma perpetrated by people forever and ever can stop it. That's what Dogen says. Now, we can't see this, and maybe we're getting frustrated and discouraged because it seems like we're trying so hard and we're not getting the results we want. But that is a very short-sighted way of looking at it. In the world that Dogen is painting for us, that he's telling us is the real world, good is all-powerful, and its effects are absolutely immense. So we should keep on doing good with a lot of confidence that our doing good is immensely effective, even if we cannot see its effects. But we can feel them. And we can know in our hearts, we can know for sure that what Dogen is saying here is really true, even if the world looks like a mess. We can really know this, and it gives us a lot of confidence. As he says, although practicing wholesome action is due, it's like before he's saying refrain from, here's it's due. Although practicing wholesome action is due, it cannot be discerned. Although this due is a vital I, it cannot be discerned. Due is not actualized for the sake of discernment. Discernment by the vital I is not the same as discernment by something else. So yes, we cannot discern. We cannot see the measure, the power of goodness with our ordinary eye and our limited mind and vision. And we don't do good so we can get the satisfaction that we've accomplished something great and saved the world. Think about it. What's so frustrating? We haven't saved the world. We haven't been able to say, I did it. We did it. Yay, we're great, we did it. What a satisfying feeling that we did it. That's, we don't get that. That's not what we're going to get. That's kind of foolish when you think about it, you know. Our ordinary eye is not going to ever see that. Something else sees it. Something else knows the power of goodness. So now he gets to purify the mind. Purify your own mind. This is very funny how, I'm using the Kaz translation, which is, all Dogen translations are quite different one from the other. You know? This one is, I know Kaz's translation for so many years and work with it for so many years. I'm of course totally convinced that Kaz's translations are the true ones, but anyway, these are all Kaz's words. Purify your own mind. This means you refrain from. Purify through, refrain from. You, that is, your own. You, that is, mind. Your own, that refrains from. Mind, that refrains from. Mind, that does. Purify through, do. Your own do. You do. This is the teaching of all Buddhas. And now I'm skipping a whole bunch here. Investigate and study this point. Those who do not examine what Buddhas are may appear to strive with great effort, but they are sentient beings who only suffer and are not really practitioners of the Buddha way. Refraining from unwholesome action and doing wholesome action are like the donkey has not left, yet the horse has arrived. So, yes, purify the mind, or as we put it, free all beings, is actually just refrain from evil and do good. That's all it is. And after we've studied about what those things mean, we know that really they mean, and as the passage implies in a very poetic way, live your own unique life, your life. You own your life. You live your own unique life according to the unique conditions of you. You can't live any other life. So don't make up an idea of Buddha or practice or doing good or avoiding evil according to the way you understand yourself as a small, separate being lost in a big, lonely, difficult world and practice like that. Don't do that, because this is just going to be more of the same, more suffering. Practice like the old Zen saying, the donkey has not left, yet the horse has already arrived. Which means, just be yourself as you are, bumbling along, making a lot of mistakes, yet going on cheerfully, trying anyway, just like a donkey, steady ahead. But at the same time, the horse of your awakening is already here. It's already Buddha activity, don't forget. Now, Dogen tells us a little story. That's probably the reason why he wrote this whole fascicle, because it's a story about do good, avoid evil, purify the mind. It's a very famous Zen story, often told. So here's the story. Zhuyi of the Tang Dynasty was the lay student of Ruman and a Dharma descendant of Matsu. And when he was governor of Han province, he studied Zen with Master Daolin. And one day he said to Master Daolin, "What is the essential meaning of Buddha Dharma?" And Daolin said, "Refrain from evil, do good." And Zhiyi was a little bit offended, you know, by this answer. He said, geez, a three-year-old child could have told me that. You know? Come on, I'm looking for some real Zen here. Tell me that. And Dalin said, yes, a three-year-old child says this, but even an 80-year-old person can't practice it. And Judy bowed in gratitude and left. So Judy thinks that refrain from evil is such a simple-minded, stupid thing. Because he's very smart. Judy was very smart. He's one of the great poets in the history of Chinese literature. And so he's looking for a more sophisticated, complicated teaching. Yes, even a child of three knows this already. But his teacher reminds him, even an old person can't yet practice it. We all try to practice it, but we can never really practice it. And Dogen says in his lengthy commentary to this story, which I will spare you more or less, he says, consider this child of three. I hope everybody here has somehow or other in your life a child of three that you can like go interview. If not, you'll find one. You can find one. Consider that child of three. Look at that child. She is luminous, right? Who is not made glad by a child of three? Yes, she throws fits. She cries, she screams, she's stubborn, she's inconsolable from time to time, but the next minute she's happy again. Because she's perfect, even when she's screeching, and she's inspiring, even then. Because she is completely absorbed with life. She wants to grow, she wants to be alive. She is hope, because life is always hope. That's life. And consider an old person who must live every day finding the courage to face the beyond. Because life is always going beyond. Life is always hope, and life is always going beyond. Dogen writes, even if evil fills not only this world, but world upon world upon world, and swallows up everything, refrain from is emancipation. Wholesome action is wholesome action in the beginning, middle, and end. It is the true essence, the true mark, and the true activity of this universe, just as it is. And at the very end, Dogen says, the child is, the child's expression is yours. It's entrusted to you. The old person's practice of the unattainable is yours. It's entrusted to you. To understand this and to speak and live in this way is the whole point of the Buddha Dharma. So that's my exposition of this fascicle of Dogen, and I left out quite a bit of it. And in my limited time to study, like a little bit of time before Dharma talk, you know, it's the only time I have to figure this out. I'm sure I made many mistakes and probably got the whole thing wrong. I apologize for that. If that's the case, I can't tell, you know, all I can do. I better say something, you know, I gotta say something. Is it right? Is it wrong? I don't know. I gotta say something. So I apologize if you should discover that I got it all wrong. But it'll have to do for today. So let us go on practicing. I think you get the idea, right? I think you're getting the idea. So there's nothing to worry about. There is nothing to worry about. Practice with full energy and full attention, and with a heart full of ease. We are doing good. We will continue to do good. Our practice really, really matters, not only to us, but to everyone. So please, let's continue. Thank you very much for listening.
Amen.